I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, Paranormal Wednesday. So as you guys know, our buddies over at Astonishing Legends, who are now friends, they're my go-to every night. I'm driving home. I still haven't made it through their whole history of podcasts. When a new one drops, I'm a patron now, so when a new one drops, I'm super excited. And one of the most recent ones they had, they were talking about time displacement. One of the guys who created Phineas and Ferb is friends with one of the two guys from Astonishing, and he told a story about when he and a friend lost about 4 or 5 hours on a trip when they were in college, and then they had a guest on named Micah Hanks, and I was just so impressed. I'd rarely heard someone speak as articulately and intelligently as he did about a whole bunch of things. So, Tony, how up our alley is this? Here's the topics of interest for Micah. Number one, time displacement.
Yep.
Number two, Sasquatch.
Check.
Number three, currently doing anthropological work with ancient mysteries. Shut up.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, he can just come back tomorrow. Hello, amen. Micah. Thanks for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Really good to be here.
Yeah. How do you know the guys from Astonishing? How did you guys hook up?
You know, well, I guess you could say that in the podcasting sphere of things, we're a slightly incestuous bunch, because those guys know my pal, Jim Harold. And Jim and I've known Jim for years. We did a supplemental podcast together for a number of years. And he kept saying to me, look, you've got to check out Astonishing Legends. These guys are really neat. They're big fans of your work, and you ought to reach out to them. So I did, and immediately they were like, you know, please come on the show. We've got a subject we want to throw at you, which is kind of funny because, as you were noting, with anthropological interests that I have these days, it's not the typical subject that I address when I go on other shows and things. But boy, we had a great time talking. They are true professionals, aren't they?
They are great. They're great guys. The biggest compliment I always give them is being a terrestrial radio guy. I have 4 hours to fill. It's a long time to talk, but I still have to be really timely and tight and bright. And I love the fact that they'll talk for 2 hours about a 17th century monarch that has nothing to do with their story. Like, I just get so wrapped up in that. I just love them. So what do you want to talk about? Since you can talk about so many things, like, this isn't a show about time displacement. We can talk about anything you want. Whatever interests you, paranormal, we can do it.
Ah, well, I appreciate that. You know, although when we're talking about time, when I say I'm interested in anthropology, I guess that there's an interest in primarily archaeology. And yes, like you mentioned, Sasquatch. I'm sure we'll get around to that in the conversation at some point, too. But really, archaeology, what we're looking at is both the spatial and the temporal relationships between things. So, you know, you're going to look at the ground, you're going to look at the earth a lot, and you're also going to dig down into the earth to be able to go back in time. And that's something that I absolutely love about archaeology and history, is that when you study the ancient past, I feel like a time traveler. I feel like I'm traveling back in time, and I'm looking at eras and people and ways of life that have long been gone, but that we can experience at least in some way today. We have to put a lot of imagination to it to really assemble the pieces of our ancient past, but that, guys, to me, just fascinates me. So, yeah, you might say, in a sense, that no matter what kind of work I'm doing, it all comes back to time.
And with the archaeology stuff, which I am a nut for, even if you go out of the paranormal world and go into mainstream archaeology, things like Göbekli Tepe, which, you know, 13,000 years ago, that blows my mind. And we're constantly finding something new that shows, like, oh no, Homo sapiens have been here for X hundreds of thousands of years. It really seems like, if you ever thought that, well, there's no need to get a degree in archaeology or anthropology, everything's been done, we're still, like, just on the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, we really are. I'm so glad you mentioned Göbekli Tepe, because, again, you know, this has kind of become a buzzword in archaeology. It's a fairly controversial site, and the reason why is because it has absolutely uprooted a lot of the things that we all thought we knew so very well about the progression technologically and otherwise towards civilization that ancient humans went through. With Göbekli Tepe, we see something that is right at the end of the Pleistocene, the last ice age, where there is a monumental structure being built, and yet in times well in advance of pottery, you know, domestication of animals, agriculture. So it puts everything out of the order that we thought that they went into. And that's what really fascinates me about Science like Göbekli Tepe. And I'm sure, again, that there will be others. That's the great thing. Before there was Göbekli Tepe, there wasn't Göbekli Tepe. In other words, you don't know these kinds of things. We don't know these things about the ancient past until we make these discoveries. I'm sure that there will be other sites of equal or maybe even greater earth-shattering magnitude that we'll find in the years to come that are going to teach us even more things that we thought we had all figured out that we really didn't.
So we're talking to Micah Hanks. His podcast is the Micah Hanks Program. Micah, to what degree are you open to, oh, I forget the gentleman's name who's so well known about ancient civilizations, but to what degree are you open to that there was some sort of advanced civilization thousands and thousands of years ago?
You're probably talking about Graham Hancock,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. I don't agree with Graham on all points, but I have tremendous respect for Graham and his work. I think that the conventional archaeologists and the conventional archaeology community, you know, the consensus opinion, this is what has been peer-reviewed and what we all understand to be scientifically most plausible. I think that that archaeological community needs people like Graham Hancock who come along from time to time, shake things up and say, okay, but now have you ever looked at it from this angle? Should we be more open to possibilities that fall outside what we can confirm through science? So I both appreciate Graham, at times maybe disagree with some of his conclusions, but also feel that he is so necessary for the scientific process. Now, coming back to your point about, you know, are there evidences for lost civilizations? This is a very contentious subject because, again, some would say absolutely not. This is all fantasy. Plato was not writing about a literal lost continent of Atlantis when he wrote about that in Timaeus and Critias. What he actually was talking about, it was an allegory, and this is philosophy, and hence why he was called a philosopher, not a historian. You know, many would look at it like that and say, again, there is nothing to this. And yet, Göbekli Tepe does seem to show us that at that time there was a much greater level of sophistication, architecturally and otherwise, rudiments of culture and religion and things probably as well. Because keep in mind, there's evidence of skull cults or some sort of a skull worship or something going on there at Göbekli Tepe as well. So, sure, some of these sites do kind of rewrite the past in ways that do suggest greater antiquity for humans, also greater sophistication much earlier on. Hancock's contention has always been that, you know, well before the end of the last ice age, that there was an advanced civilization. But I think that there has to be a qualifier added right here, Dave, because again, what do we mean by advanced? You know, just a few years ago, people would have laughed you out of the room if you'd said, well, in ancient times, you know, 12,000, 13,000 years ago, when the colonization of America was first occurring and migrations into the New World were first happening from Eurasia, the idea that people had used boats would have been laughed at. Well, what evidence do we have that they had boats? But obviously, the ways that we find that people turn up in locations where they would had to have crossed bodies of water, and yet ample archaeological evidence shows that they were there a long time ago, and that, again, water passage was required, they had to have had the technology. So the fact that we can't find it, the boats that is, doesn't mean that they didn't exist. They're perishable technologies. Wood doesn't last the test of time like stone tools and things do.
Right.
So I think that's a good example for how we can see that some technologies that we might deem advanced, relatively speaking, certainly could have been in use, but they may not be easily accessible to us this long after the fact.
Ryan, you said that you had a special interest in time displacement or lost time.
Yeah, just because I don't know much about it, and I love the concept of time travel. I mean, are we talking about something that has to be supernatural, or are we talking about something that can be naturally explained?
Brian, that's a really good question. Because, again, when Scott and Forrest had me on the program and we talked about this, again, the conversation we had kind of stemmed, and ladies and gents at home, keep in mind this side of the things, we're stepping out of archaeology and into the speculative realm, but again, the conversation we were having was oriented around the experience of a couple of friends of theirs that came on the show and said, hey, we had an experience where we couldn't account for, you know, some time. I would liken that more to missing time than a time slip, I think, which is, you know, how some referred to it. Missing time, again, is a phenomena which you see it. It's prevalent in claims of people who have, you know, had alleged activities or encounters with extraterrestrials, you know, again, abduction type scenarios. Now, I'm not here to say that those experiences are legitimate or that they're not. I'm merely saying people claim that they have that kind of missing time experience in relation to these events. That sounds a lot like what they were describing. But in terms of, Ryan, what you're talking about, could this be something that isn't paranormal per se? You know, there's that old saying that an enemy is only a friend you haven't made yet. Well, I would say that a lot of things that people would call paranormal phenomena are actually little understood natural phenomena that one day, with better evidence in support of their existence, a better fundamental scientific understanding, and science has to be applied for that to be achieved. But again, once science helps us understand these things, those things which we call paranormal today will be very normal tomorrow. So no, it doesn't have to be something paranormal. In fact, if there's anything to these concepts like, you know, time anomalies, hiccups, you know, in space-time, which may be very unlikely, but again, we can get into that a little bit. Whatever that is, eventually will be something that we can understand, and thereby it won't always be paranormal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can I throw out a really kind of related, weird thought I had last night? Middle of the night. So, Micah, I go home and I watch nerd shows like How the Universe Works and Nova, the Einstein riddle, and quantum physics. I just love it. And so we talk on the show about it a lot in very layman's terms. And we've been talking about multiverses and talking about, I've been watching a lot of shows on like spooky attraction at a distance where one particle can be here, one particle can be in the Andromeda Galaxy, and they have no distinct, they're just mush. They're just like, they don't know what it is until you look at it, like the Schrodinger's cat thing. So all matter out there at its fundamental level is just, it's nothing. It's just mush until you observe it, and then it turns into whatever it is going to be, which makes no sense, but that's quantum physics. So I'm really interested in the simulation theory, too. This is all just this gigantic simulation. So I'm sure someone else has thought this, but try out this theory. What if it kind of makes sense to me that if we are in this gigantic simulation, that just is like a, like when you're playing a really elaborate video game.
Yeah.
And a horse runs into the picture and then runs out. He doesn't keep running. He doesn't like go live a life. He just is no longer existing. So what if the attraction to spooky difference, distance Einstein thing, just as a energy saving for your simulation, the stuff you're not looking at is just mush. And then we look at it, and it comes into being like, oh, look, it's Jupiter. Oh, look, it's a can of peas. Oh, look, it's an electron. And whoever's running this thing just goes, yeah, we're going to save so much energy by doing this. Is that the dumbest thing or the smartest thing I've ever said?
I will say this. I actually really like that theory. I think that's a great way of looking at things because more and more physicists and computer scientists are beginning to look at the age-old philosophical question of what is consciousness? Is the universe really what it appears to be? Are we all Sims, essentially?
Yeah.
Many people are looking at this long-standing philosophical conundrum mathematically and physically and going, you know, in terms of probability, the likelihood that what we all experience here, our shared reality, the likelihood that this is indeed base reality is like a million to one. In other words, probabilistically speaking or statistically speaking, we're looking at the likelihood that this is a simulation, that there are other realities apart from this one, and that perhaps base reality is something from which our experiences stem.
This is crazy.
And so, yeah, and of course, one of the probably most visible proponents of that right now is Elon Musk. Elon Musk, of course, is a very brilliant guy. Then again, he also is proposing that we launch nuclear weapons at Mars and melt the Martian ice caps, you know, to try and make that planet more habitable.
He's uneven.
Kind of a kind of a crazy idea. But then again, there's a fine line between madness and genius.
Micah, can you hold on for one more segment?
Sure.
Okay, let's come back and talk to some Sasquatch. We're talking to Micah Hanks. You can find him at the Micah Hanks Program Podcast. Quick break. Welcome back, guys. DGS Paranormal Wednesday. My guest is Micah Hanks, the Micah Hanks Program. Really great, very popular podcast. So, Micah, let's talk some Sasquatch. I can't get enough Sasquatch. I'm 54, so I remember seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film really, really young on like In Search Of or something. And I was hooked. And when the guys, Forrest and Scott over at Astonishing did their like six-parter, I listened to it twice, probably the only guy in the world that did that. So what are your thoughts on Bigfoot, Sasquatch?
Well, I have a lot of them. And of course, everybody at home should binge listen to Scott and Forrest on Astonishing Legends and their incredible breakdown of the Patterson-Gimlin footage. You know, I recently did an episode that looked at it not as in-depth as they did, but I think it just goes to show how fascinated we all are with that film. And yet, here's the problem with it. It's the best footage purporting to show a Sasquatch, but that evidence, you know, for what it is not good enough by itself to prove to the scientific community that these things are actually out there. So why would someone like me, who's very interested in archaeology and anthropology, why would I, you know, risk everything and take serious interest in Sasquatch? Well, here's the thing. And I think it was very well articulated by Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum of Idaho State University. If, of course, he says there's going to be hoaxes, there are going to be misperceptions, you know, people who misidentify things, they see a bear, they think it's something else. All it takes is one real footprint, one sighting that is legitimate and exactly as what someone says they saw and what they recalled seeing. All it takes is one, and then all bets are off. Then we're looking at a real phenomena that has to be treated as such. And for me, again, if you look at this, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people who are really skeptical about the idea, they don't look at the evidence. They haven't read the books. They haven't spoken to the eyewitnesses. There has to be something more to this. That's where I am on this, Dave. There has to be something more to this with the accumulation of anecdotal evidence that we have on our table.
Yeah, go ahead, Tone. You got a Sasquatch?
Yeah, Micah, I just wanted to ask you, because I couldn't agree more with that statement, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think may be behind all these sightings, because there's the Bigfoot, there's the Sasquatch, there's the skunk ape, there's so many different...
There's Momo.
Yeah, there's so many different versions of the Bigfoot or Sasquatch legend, Yetis. Are they... Do you think that these are multiple creatures in different parts of the world? Are they all about the same thing? Or, like, how do you view the whole thing? Are we looking at a bunch of different animals or one basic, you know, creature?
Well, you know, the what we might call the cryptozoological community has many proponents who would say that, look, it does no good service to this subject if we treat every instance where these things are alleged to be and exist and appear as though they're valid. And furthermore, to say that there are different varieties of them, let's just talk about one thing and let's just treat it as such. You know, this is just called Sasquatch. I don't agree with that, actually, and I'll tell you why. If you look at the anthropological record, if you look at ancient human ancestry, of course, we know that, you know, humans lived alongside modern, anatomically modern humans, Homo sapiens sapiens. We lived alongside Neanderthals. More recently, we discovered that we also had another close relative to Neanderthals that we also lived alongside, which were the Denisovans. But recent genomic studies also show us that, in addition to those two, there are other ancient hominins that we shared lineage with that we have evidence of in our genetic history, but which we haven't found in the fossil record. So we know that there were even others apart from that. Now, many would say, yeah, but again, the Denisovans and the Neanderthals, they were much more like humans. That is true. But then you've got the anomalies. Like, for instance, a pair of fishermen off the coast of Taiwan dredged up in their net this very unusual fossil jaw. It obviously belonged to a hominid. And it's been called the Pinghu 1 jaw fragment. What's fascinating about it is it hasn't got the mental protrusion, which, although mental seems to denote the brain, we're actually talking about the chin. It also has very strange-looking, almost flatly ground teeth, which probably says a lot about what this creature ate. It is an unidentified hominid from the Pleistocene, from the Ice Age. And although it could be hundreds of thousands of years old, on the nearer side of likely, they say that it probably existed anywhere from 70,000 years old, or years ago, to as recently as 10,000 years ago. Guys, again, 13,000 years ago was what we once identified as the arrival of the so-called Clovis culture in North America. Now we're pushing that back, and we have pre-Clovis, or what some archaeologists called older than Clovis, and yet contemporaneous with that, we're saying that there may be as yet unidentified hominids that were very, very primitive in appearance. Chris Stringer, one of the most notable anthropologists in the world, said of the Pinghu jaw fragment, if this is Denisovan, they looked completely different from what we expect. My guess would be it's not Denisovan. That suggests that there indeed were some very primitive-looking ancient hominids, and they may have been sticking around far more recently. There are other examples I could give, but my point is that all throughout history, you know, we had different hominid types that coexisted alongside each other, and even modern humans had many relatives that since we thought had died out. But the prevalence of reports of similar man-like bipedal upright walking, much larger than us often and generally more primitive in appearance, these other hominins, Sasquatch, Yeti, Yeren, Alma, whatever you want to call them, the prevalence of these all over the world strongly suggests to me that perhaps we are looking at small pockets of relict hominids, or hominins as the modern term these days would be for this. I think that there's a very good case based on how we already have looked at anthropology and seen the same thing in the past, that that's probably very similar to what we're seeing today.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. No, it's what you're always saying. You're always saying the exact same thing.
Love it.
Because you're always correcting me when I say hominid.
I love it. I love it.
Micah, we're probably 10 miles away as the crow flies right now where we're broadcasting from the Cahokia Mounds, which is a shame because it's like first grade classes go and they jack around on the mounds and that's it. No one here seems to get how internationally significant the Cahokians were.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any work on that at all?
I have not been to Cahokia. I hope to go to Cahokia, but I'm down here in the southeast. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, and there are a number of enigmatic. They're not quite on the same scale as Cahokia, at least in terms of size, but there are a number of Mississippian mound complexes throughout the southeast that my team and I have visited, and that team, by the way, although we are a democracy, so I don't mean to give the impression that I am the leader of that team. It's a group of researchers, Jason Pentrail, who is our environmental scientist, our geologist, James Waldo, and myself collectively. We're called the Seven Ages Research Associates. This is something that we spent a lot of time doing, and we actually did a field trip last fall going to many of these Mississippian mound complexes. The fascinating thing is, some time ago, Jason and I spoke with Dr. Robert Caballo of the of Boston University. Robert Caballo has done a lot of work at Teotihuacan, and this, of course, a Mesoamerican site that has to do with, supposedly a whole different culture. And yet, nonetheless, the prevalence of some of their mythic symbolism, like the winged serpent and things like this, are identical to many of the ritual, probably the most significant, in fact, ritual symbols that appear in the Mississippian culture here in North America. And so we asked Dr. Caballo, again, is there any evidence of communication between these cultures? And he said, well, we need to be careful how we phrase this. But again, he says, yes, there was obsidian from areas like Teotihuacan found in excavations at the Spiro Mound. And again, that shows quite evidently that people were getting around. And there's more evidence, again, than that. But really, as far as Cahokia, many look at Cahokia as being kind of the epicenter of that culture, the Mississippian culture. It may be one part of it. I don't know that it was the origin point. And if anything, what we're beginning to see is that people, many different cultures in the ancient Americas, were getting around, they were communicating, they were exchanging in trade with one another. And I think that, again, as we're putting together the pieces of this puzzle, it's becoming a much more complex picture than we once thought it was.
Micah, for people who have whet their appetite and want to consume more of what you do, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, just head over to MicahHanks.com. That's MicaH, and then Hanks like the actor Tom. And if you go to MicahHanks.com/shows, you can find all the podcasts I produce, including the Archaeology Show for Seven Ages, my news and current events show, Middle Theory, and, as you mentioned, the Micah Hanks program. So I invite everybody. I think you'll probably enjoy it, especially if you like this fine program. Dave, you do great work, man.
Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Anytime. Let's stay in touch.
All right. See you, Micah. 545 DGS. I think this. I found what I'm going to do when I retire.
Okay.
If there's still such a thing as paranormal, I think I'm just going to do a paranormal podcast. Perfect. I could do that all day.
Yes.
I love it. I love that stuff. I hate and detest and loathe the honey boo boo version of paranormal you see on television a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, look, we're black guys. Hey, look at us. We're ass kickers from, we're
the Bronx.
I hate it. I hate all those stupid ghost hunter shows or killing Bigfoot.
These ghosts have never met a pair of ghost hunters from the South.
Exactly. I hate it. Mm-hmm. But when someone like Miger, like Forrest and Scott, do it intelligently.
Yes.
And with the thumb on the scale for, being skeptic about it, I love it. I think it's fascinating.
Agreed.
You think within the next 10 years, paranormal is going to go away?
I mean, it could all fall at once. Like, we discovered UFOs it all. Land, Bigfoots jump out, and we're like, well, there's that.
It's all solved.
Nessie just swims up and starts eating people, and you're like, the whole genre is gone.
Direct communication with the afterlife.
Yeah, what do you want to know? Just like, we got it. We got it all right here.
I feel like Nessie is peaceful.
Yeah, did you see the
Man, I really wanted to ask him about the Mandela effect, but we ran out of time.
Oh, shoot, you should have jumped in.
Yeah, I know, but he was on a roll, and there was a lot of good stuff to talk about, but I wonder where he falls on that. And it wasn't necessarily, like, time displacement, so I didn't know if it was one of his
deals or not. I had one today.
Mandela?
I had a Berenstain Bear today. It was so friggin' weird.
Which was it?
I'm driving in. It's all mine. It's brand new. I'm driving in, and I'm very aware of traffic. I'm like a starer. I'm a straight up stalker. I want to see everyone. I want to see the weird things you're doing. And so Nick drives a blue Chevy Equinox, and I look behind me and I see, oh, there's Nick, because it's just Nick, and he's wearing his glasses today, and that's Nick. And so we're stopping in traffic, and we hadn't spoken yet. And I'm just getting ready to roll down my window and say hello to my 24-year-old son. The blue Equinox pulls up, and it is an 80-year-old man. It freaked me the F out. I was just like, literally my window was down. I'm like, hey, whoa.
Hello, sir. Hello there, sir.
It was crazy.
So is future Nick?
Nah, maybe.
You could ask him some questions about how you die.
Could have been Dennis's grandpa.
There's a Loch Ness Monster article on Fox News today.
Shut up.
On the Fox News website today.
No, you shut your mouth.
Loch Ness Monster theory plausible, according to scientists.
Man, that's such a Fox News headline.
That's the headline.
Did they have someone's boobs?
University of Otago geneticist.
It's not a real
Neil
place.
Gemmel.
Yeah. Or a real person.
Said that there have been more than 1,000 sightings of something unknown in Loch Ness, but there are probably only 4 explanations of what it could be. They did a bunch of DNA testing from water samples, where they tested things like skin, scales, feathers, fur, poop, and they said that the chances of it being something prehistoric from dinosaur time is very plausible.
They have Nessie's poop?
Scientifically.
I think they have Neil's poop.
From the from the research that they have done.
Now look, I didn't need to do this, but I've tested my own poop, and I'm not Nessie.
Good to know.
However,
it's good to know, sir.
All I can say for sure...
There are some issues, though.
Yeah. However, we did discover some problem.
Do need a colonoscopy. I'll be addressing. But I'm not Nessie.
Don't remember having corn, but...
Oh. Good Lord. No matter who says it, it bothers me, but somehow you saying it makes it worse.
Sorry. Sorry.
Rach was mistakenly identified as the most attractive homeless person in world history a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So Wednesdays, we have like the... I don't know what goes on out here, but people give away free stuff.
Wednesday night.
And at a Cardinals game, I was walking back, and I was wearing like a cream-colored Cardinals jersey, wearing a hat. I'm clearly walking back from the Cardinals game, and one of the people giving away stuff at the event was like, hey, sweetie, you need anything on my table? I was like... No, I'm going to go to my home now.
Oh, jeez.
But I didn't get the vibe that they thought I was homeless. I think it was more just like, literally anyone who wants something can have something.
Were you close enough to see what it was?
I thought it was like a feminine, like a bag full of feminine products, like deodorant.
Were they hitting on you?
No, it was,
hey,
I don't
baby.
Think so. It was on the older woman.
Deodorant.
Older women could hit on you.
Yeah.
It's 2019.
You look like you need some baby powder.
Yeah. I mean, an old lady with a bag full of tampons? Who doesn't want to be hit on by that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wiggins, you'd have taken them.
Oh, yeah. I would have taken them and ran.
Hey, any without deal the date, you though. Can get.
Hey, and then dumped them as you're running and then fallen in the field.
Ryan, have you ever tried to extreme coupon before? It seems like something you'd be into.
Yeah.
There's a level at which couponing becomes more
extreme.
Than
yeah.
it's,
no, I agree.
You know, extreme.
You're a Groupon guy, though, right?
Yeah.
Gotta be.
Well, he did the massage.
Oh, you can smell
it
on him.
The $24 Groupon place with the stains on the ceiling.
No, that was not a Groupon. That's their normal price.
Oh, that's upsetting.
Did you try to get your AAA discount? Excuse me, Bing, but do you happen to...
I never AARP. Try to use my AAA discount.
No.
Even in hotels?
I don't really stay at hotels ever. I guess you should. I could start. Yeah. I am a card-carrying AAA member.
Just walk in and slap it down.
I'm on year three, people.
And then lean on the counter.
You just walk away.
I want my 5%.
Hi. I'm also on the radio.
So you've got to stop for silent laughing. Off. I make you laugh more than any person since Turb Rock, and you never make a sound.
I know. Try.
That's because it would be constant. Well, and I think that would drive people nuts.
No, you got to start making a sound.
At least laugh when I say something because people still think you hate me. And I know you're laughing at me over there.
Yeah, I am laughing.
Where would they get that?
I think at you is Frank.
It's so weird. People think you don't like me because you never laugh when I talk and you always tell me I'm awful.
Huh.
But so, she is laughing.
That's awesome.
She seems unwilling to confirm that.
Yeah, she's not
sometimes
doing anything.
I am. That's absolutely true. Sometimes, yes.
If we go on a Bigfoot hunt, we should bring Sue to do the calls.
Oh, God.
What
yeah.
are the calls?
The yips and the whoops.
What? Talk to me.
Do a whoop for us.
I don't. How does that? What? That's how
you
they
just
say
it. I just did it. Yeah. I just did it.
Whoop.
Whoop.
Whoop. Whoop. And what
will
is that
you,
supposed
will you
to
try,
do?
Will you just try?
It makes them sexually aroused.
Yeah, don't.
Okay, well, then I'm done.
That's not what it does. That's the yips, not the whoops.
That's what it did to Ryan.
Can I have the... Can I hear
uh-oh, here comes the Sasquatch. Whoop. He's got a red rocket.
Dude, you literally can't say that.
What?
What
he literally
happened?
Just did.
Oh, brother.
What?
If I were running the board, I would have dumped that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because it's drive time.
No, it's fine.
Happy back to school, kids.
Seriously.
What? Mommy, what did that man...
Hope you had a good first day of second grade.
the Bigfoot was holding a red rocket.
Yeah, it was a firework.
I am not
at least
doing
Rachel's
any
dirty talk earlier was off the air.
Yeah.
What about... the about, surgery that
oh,
we were
no,
talking about?
No, about this,
oh, about old girl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know when to keep it quiet on the air.
Mm-hmm. You sure
you're a pro.
I know yeah. when to
hold them
and I know when to fold them.
Yeah. I think someone's about to learn that lesson tomorrow. Have a discussion with Mr. Steve Moore about Bigfoot wieners.
Dear God.
What? Squatch
boner. My grandma
boners.
Listens to this show.
Hashtag Squatch Boner.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.